Welcome back to the second hour of Guitar Tracks. I'm your host, Brian Tarquin. I had the great honor of sitting down with one of my guitar heroes from childhood, Robin Trower. His inflections and dynamics on the guitar are compared to none. So I asked him how he got involved with guitar and all of his influences.
First time I was really aware of electric guitar was with Elvis, so Scotty Moore. So really, it's because of Scotty Moore that I wanted to play guitar. And I got my first guitar bought for me by my dad at Christmas and started to, you know, play for my own amusement at first, and then really started to realize that, you know, I might be quite good at it. And I went on from there. A hollow body cello guitar by a mate called Rossetti. I mean, it was probably the cheapest guitar you could possibly have, but it was a good start. I mean, I was a rock and roll fan, really. You know, Chuck Berry, and I really liked Jerry Lee Lewis's guitar player as well. He used to play some nice things in the early records. Everly Brothers guitar player, excellent. You know, those are the kind of the inspirations. Gene Vincent's guitar player, Cliff Gallup, you know. Fabulous. And then sort of early 60s, I started to hear B.B. King. And that's when it all changed. that's when I realized there was something else out there. And, you know, I think, you know, B.B. King was a big influence initially. I really liked some of Otis Rush's stuff at that time as well. So Many Roads was a big favorite of mine, and then Homework. So, you know, there's quite a few players that, you know, I would consider to be my mentors. B.B. King being the first main one after Scotty Moore, and then Albert King, and then Jimi Hendrix. Well, to me, it sounded like a new way of playing, and it was so much expression in it. That was the beauty of it. On my mother's side, my grandmother was a professional singer and comedian, and my uncle was a band leader, a dance band. So there is sort of music in there somewhere, definitely. Yeah, the 50s was an era of American rock and roll, you know, and then in Britain there was this stuff called skiffle. Yeah, which was like a folk thing, but it was kind of rocking. But it was, you know, that was led by a guy called Lonnie Donegan, who was brilliant, actually. And, yeah, he had so many hits. And he was great, you know, but skiffle in itself was, you know, a five-minute wonder, really. And then in the 60s, you know, I think we started to hear more blues records. You know, I can remember early in the 60s that we started to hear stuff like Howling Wolf and Muddy Waters and stuff like that, you know, which probably was quite a few years old by the time we got to hear it. But I think once that started coming into the country, people were really picking up on it, you know. Obviously, it started a whole wave of bands that started to play that material, you know. Obviously, the most obvious one being the Rolling Stones. There was quite a few doing it.
That's right, Robin. The Stones were not the only ones. There was a list like Cream and the Yardbirds and the Blues Breakers that spearheaded that movement for England. Now Robin goes on to tell me about his first band, the Paramounts, and how that actually led to him joining Procol Harum.
Well, I was already in a band called the Paramounts. By that time, we were starting to get into early 60s. We, you know, 63, somewhere around there. We were starting to get into a lot of rhythm and blues. We were doing Bobby Bland, James Brown, Ray Charles, you know, quite a lot of that stuff. In fact, at one stage, we were doing half of James Brown Live at the Apollo. And that was with Gary Brooker, who went on to form Procol Harum. Just a four-piece, Gary on keyboards and guitar, bass and drums. But, we got away with it, I think. I started to get into sort of blues a lot more with B.B. King's influence. And, you know, I got into people like Son House. It was a difficult musical time for me, because I was wanting to do something completely different, and left the Paramounts, and I formed my own band called The Jam. Then I got a call from Gary, you know, that they had a number one record and needed a guitar player. So, you know, that was very fortunate for me, because that really opened the door for me to become a proper professional, you know. I was on the first five albums, I think. So I think it was 4 or 5 years. Well, Gary wrote most of the music. I used to chip in occasionally. But as time went on in Oklahoma, I was writing more and more music. And it was all guitar music, obviously. And I wrote a couple of things which were all guitar, you know, song which Keith Reed had the idea of doing a tribute to Jimi Hendrix after he died. And we wrote a song called Song for a Dreamer. And I think that's when it sort of kicked off for me. I realized, you know, that I could come up with really strong ideas. I think that's when I was starting to pick up on the Strat. Well, before that a little bit, but I used the Strat on that because I was playing Gibsons a lot. You know, I think that's when I started to really use the Strat as my first instrument, really. Yeah, I had a Les Paul. I switched between two or three different Les Pauls, actually, while I was in Procol Harum. I think once I started using it a bit more, like I say, on the Broken Barricades, was it? I just really like, when you're leading, doing lead work on it, it's got a very vocal human voice quality to it, which I really responded to. It's more expressive, you know. It's harder to get something out of it. It's harder work, you know, but I think because of the single coil pickups as well, it's more open, got a more open, I think a little bit more musical sounding, actually. At that time playing, I think I might have been playing high watt then. But yeah, that's when I started using the Univibe. Obviously, that was inspired by Machine Gun by Hendrix, you know, to use that sound, big influence. B.B. King, Albert King, and Jimi Hendrix, I think of as my three mentors, always looking over my shoulder there. There wasn't really space for it in that band, so I had to leave and try and form something of my own, you know. Had a band with a singer called Frankie Miller. Yeah, and through Frankie, he brought in James Dewar on bass. Yeah, so that's how I got together with Jimmy. And Jimmy found our first drummer, Rez Isidore. So, you know, that sort of followed on from that. So I started writing music for, you know, what was the first solo album, which was Twice Removed from Yesterday. And I co-wrote the songs with Jimmy, and that's how we got started.
That's a great transition from Frankie Miller then meeting James Dewar, because James Dewar had a powerful voice for the trio that he had with Robin Trower. And of course, I had to ask him about his collaboration with Jack Bruce on such albums as BLT, which is one of my favorites. And he goes on to tell me about his new album with Maxi Priest.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. We had a lot of fun making that. There are some good things on it. Our favorite album that we did together, me and Jack, was the last thing we did, which was called Seven Moons. That was our favorite of the three that we did together. I think because we collaborated on every track, you know, we wrote all the songs together sort of thing. So I think that's why it was more satisfying. Well, we played live in the studio and sort of rehearsed in the studio and recorded all in the same place sort of thing. No, I didn't know Jack before. I was always a big fan, you know, of his singing and bass playing. You know, the guy was dynamite. That was the thing. Dynamite. And arranged a meeting through my manager and his manager and played him some of the musical ideas I had, and he was into it. So, you know, that's how that first album came about. Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about different drummers we could use, but I was into what Bill was doing at the time, and I talked Jack into trying him, and he was keen, you know. Well, that's the beauty of working with someone as gifted as Jack, you know, that he instinctively knows the complementary thing to do, you know. Such a brilliant musician. I think he is a bit of a trailblazer, actually, on the bass. I was at Livingston Brown Studio mixing an album, and he was also working with Maxi. He had been working with Maxi for a long time. But as I was leaving, Maxi was coming in, and we chatted, and Maxi said, well, why don't we get together and write some stuff, you know? So initially I thought, yeah, that'll be interesting, because I loved his voice. He's, you know, such a beautiful voice. And so I was thinking at first that I was just going to write some music for his thing, you know. But after we did the first couple of things, you know, we said, oh, you know, we should do an album. It was working so well, you know. So we did an album together. Actually, what it is a three-man sort of project where Livy was doing the engineering, and he co-wrote the lyrics with me and Maxi, and then Livingston did the orchestrations. I would bring in the music. After the first couple of things, I just started writing tunes that I wanted to hear Maxi sing, basically. Then we would get together and do the lyrics, and Maxi would lead on the lyrics, because obviously, as a singer, he had to believe in it. So, you know, he took the lead in it, but we all chipped in. So it was a fascinating project and a lot of fun to do. There's some stuff on an album I did in the 70s called In City Dreams. You know, there's stuff on there that I don't think is a million miles away from what I came up with for Maxi to sing. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, no, I mean, he's a wonderful singer. You know, I mean, that to me is a world-class instrument, his voice.
Yes, Maxi has a beautiful voice. He has such great timbre and wonderful control. Now Robin goes on and tells me about his Fender Signature Series guitar and how he worked with the custom shop to get it just perfect for himself. He also goes over other gear like his amps and his pedals.
Well, I worked with a guy called Todd, who's one of the main guys in the custom shop. And we just went through, what pieces would you like on it? You know, what would you like on it? So I decided I would have a large headstock, because I thought with a bit more wood, there might be a bit more resonance to the guitar. And I had him put the locking tuners on, because I wanted to keep the whammy bar. And I chose three different styles of pickups that they have, that they make themselves, you know, and five-way switch, maple neck, jumbo frets. You know, it's got all the bits that really help me, you know, do what I do, sort of thing. I think the bridge pickup is called a Texas Special, and the middle pickup is a 60s reissue, and the neck pickup is a 50s reissue. I like having that 50s pickup on the neck, because it's very, very, it's not a very powerful pickup, and it's very open sounding. You get that nice tubey sound out of it. But, you know, if it's so bad, I have to go in between the pickups, you know, a five-way switch, you go in between the pickups. It does cancel a lot of that. I don't like using that sound, but some nights, you know, you just have to. No, with some studios, you do, but the one I have been using for the last five or six years, I've had no trouble with it. It's out in the middle of nowhere, you know, so it's pretty good. Even with all those problems, I don't like to use, you know, like humbucking pickups. I just don't like the sound of it. Well, there's a pickup called a Lace, that Fender. That was pretty good. I mean, it didn't sound exactly like, you know, the old single coil, but it did get rid of the noise, and it wasn't too bad. Not too bad at all. For pedals, I used Mike Fuller's stuff called Full Tone from California. Yeah, I use all his stuff, you know, the Deja Vibe and Fat Boost and the Overdrive, the Wah. It's called a Clyde 2, is it? All his stuff is very good. I use a thing that he built for me, which is an actual fact of wah. I've got kind of volume controls on it, so you can set it in one position, you know, so you can choose that tone rather than trying to keep your foot in one place, if you know what I mean. Yeah, you can have it set in one, what would be one foot position, if you know what I mean. He made it for me a few years ago, but I show it off to Best Example on a track off my last album called coming closer to the day. I use that quite a lot on that track, and that's some of my favourite soloing that I've done on record. I've always used Marshall. I use a lot of different Marshalls, you know, different amps and what have you. Mostly lately I've been using the 50 watt, I think it's called a 1989. I've used the JCM 800, they just re-released it, like an updated version of it. I use that. And I also use the combo that's nicknamed Bluesbreaker, 212 20 watt combo. That's got a lovely sound because that's all hand wired. Yeah, and so I use that in the studio on the 50 watt. And sometimes, you know, the 800 as well through 412. I use the Cornells on some of the album with Maxi. Well, they're good because we did that album in such a small little studio. They were ideal for that environment. You know, you can get a nice sound out of them without being too loud. But I also, on that album, used the that 20-watt 2-12 Marshall as well. Yeah, well, I use Ernie Balls. I tune down a whole step, and that's just so I can use heavier strings on the top two so I can get a bit of sound out of them, you know, because otherwise too hard to bend the strings, you know. Yeah, it's a 12, 15 on the top two, so, you know, that's the only way I can find to get enough sort of sound tone out of them, you know. Thank you very much. I take that as a great compliment coming from you, Vincent, with all your background. But, yeah, it'd be nice talking to you.
It was a great pleasure speaking with Rob, and he's such a nice guy, and he took the time out to really explain how he gets his tone and his large history in blues. So now here's one track that changed my life in the 70s, Day of the Eagle.
Thank you. That's all right, I'm cool now.
Hi, this is Robin Trower, and you're listening to Guitar Tracks on WFIT.
Does the road stretch out for me like it trails across a clear blue sky? Not foreseen to somewhere yet to be defined. Coming closer to the day, move up through the gates or turn away. Could be a promise of the real, not a head full. Lies. Take up my armor and my shield as the sun begins to rise. out to make the going sweet and ride a wave on the crest. Wake up from forgetful sleep as all goes forward now without rest. Coming closer to the day, move up through the gears or turn away. Coming closer to the day, move up through the gates or turn away.
To play that for Robin Trower, Coming Closer to the Day. He told me that was one of his favorite songs he ever laid a solo on. Before that was No Island Lost from BLT. Now I'm going to play Vegas Blue by yours truly, Brian Tarquin, from my new album. And this is my nod to Robin Trower.